Today, central banks now have a perfect alibi. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis, well, that is Post, covering finance and property news. Well, the spate of central bank meetings this week, with Canada and the Fed done, and the Bank of England today, and of course the RBA next week, continues to stress the high levels of uncertainty relating to monetary policy thanks to the Gulf conflict and the trajectory of energy prices. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell warned that the energy shock brought by the war, quote, hasn't even peaked yet, saying at his last regular press conference as chair of the Fed that conflict in the Middle East has added to economic uncertainty. Actually, on that front, Trump said the blockage in the Straits of Hormuz is somewhat more effective than the bombing. They are choking like a stuffed pig, and it's going to be worse for them. They can't have a nuclear weapon. That's based on a telephone interview on Wednesday, according to Axios, and Trump said that he'd rejected a recent proposal from Iran to reopen the strait because it would have delayed talks on the nuclear issues until later. On the other hand, Iranian officials show no sign of backing down. It's unclear how much storage and time Iran has left before it would need to close down some of the oil wells, which may damage them permanently. Some suggest it may be another 12 to 22 days, but others say much, much longer. The US, by the way, has spent an estimated $25 billion on the Iran war so far, according to the Pentagon's budget chief. On the back of this, Brent oil shot much higher as the global crude benchmark knocked on $120 a barrel, a fresh high since the Iran war began. The Duke contract, by the way, expires today, which is another reason for the contract to march higher towards the physical price. And West Texas Intermediate was also trading significantly higher too. The broader fallout of the strangled straits will continue to bite, with supplies of commodities like urea, helium, plastics, jet fuel all running short and being priced higher. And therefore the prospects of famine and shortages are continuing to rise. But back to the central banks and their monetary policy. The Fed left the cash rate unchanged, with the benchmark federal funds rate at a range of 3.5 to 3.75%. But there was division in the ranks of the voting membership, as four voted against the decision, including three who objected to language in the post-meeting statement that suggested the central bank would eventually resume cutting rates. The 8-4 vote marked the first time since October 1992 that four officials dissented against a Federal Open Market Committee decision. That means that only eight FOMC members voted to hold rates at the 3.5 to 3.75% level. Powell said that they reflected the fact that the centre of the committee is moving towards a more neutral place, but added a majority of us didn't feel like we needed to send a signal on that right now. Officials did agree to make a separate change to their statement, adding some emphasis to a line describing uncertainty emanating from the war in the Middle East. The new wording referenced the high level of that uncertainty. And by the way, Powell is intending to stay on the Fed as he quits his chair, it appears, but will maintain a low profile. A bit of comedy gold just here.
Howard Schneider with Reuters. You mentioned that staying on as a governor, you intend to keep a low profile. I'm just wondering if you could give us a little more detail on what that looks like and how you can...
Touché.
Central banks have been faced with various supply shocks, from the COVID era, the Ukraine war, the Trump tariffs, and now the Gulf war, all of which have knocked their policies off course, or actually more precisely, getting inflation to stay within their target bands. US inflation has been above the Fed's 2% target for 5 years. And consumer price inflation surged in March by the most in nearly 4 years on the back of a record increase in gasoline prices. That spike was largely contained to energy prices for now, but companies and economists are warning the longer the war goes on, the more likely inflation is to bleed into non-energy goods and services. And as I discussed yesterday, inflation in Australia is rising and the RBA has also failed to get inflation under control. holding rates too low, hoping to protect jobs. But in so doing, they continue to fail in their mandate. Oh, and by the way, today's RBA financial aggregates data for March 26, which is, of course, taking into account only the first rate hike because the second was on the 18th of March, so not much impact yet, it shows lending for housing credit remained very strong. March was the first full month of the war in the Middle East, but it doesn't really seem to have made much difference to credit growth. For housing, total outstanding credit was up 0.6% across the month, and that makes a 7.3% year-on-year growth. That's the largest annual rise since September 2022. Owner-occupied housing credit was up 0.6% over the month and up 6.2% year-on-year, its largest annual rise since February 2022. And investor housing credit was up 0.8% over the month and up a massive 9.6% over the year. That's the largest annual rise since September 2015. Now, looking ahead, credit growth does face sizable headwinds, and we're going to continue to expect to see some moderation in coming months with higher borrowing costs following the increase in the RBA cash rate in February and March, and that should begin to weigh on credit demand. And if another 2 to 3 hikes come, those effects will probably intensify. But then, once again, we see housing in focus ahead of the budget. Treasurer Jim Chalmers raised concerns on Thursday in a podcast hosted by the Commonwealth Bank of Australia that the young Australians were struggling to get into the housing market and flagged that supporting first home buyers would be a feature of the upcoming May 12th budget. There are some issues of intergenerational fairness that we're very focused on, and one of those issues is around whether or not young people can get a toehold in the housing market, he said. Now, as I've highlighted before, most people entering the property market at the moment are doing so with the help of the bank of mum and dad, or more accurately, actually, the family bank. But that worsens inequality and cements advantage for people who are fortunate enough to be born into wealthier families. This helps to explain the results of a report released on Thursday by the Actuaries Institute, which showed that some of the long-term decrease in home ownership rates for Australians aged 25 to 34 reversed in the past 5 years. But it does seem to me that both the government and the RBA will be able to construct alibis for why things are not progressing as they said they would. The latest is, well, the war did it. Whilst it may be convenient to blame Trump and his Middle East adventure, we really need to question the basis of RBA policy and their forecasting. It's pretty awful, to put it politely. And Chalmers and the government more generally will continue to push their high migration programs rather than tackle the root cause, preferring to mumble on about intergenerational issues and housing policy in the face of reality. And I expect ahead a spate of blame the war comments from central bankers for once again failing in their task. If only there was some real accountability for those unelected technocrats. There is none. Now, I suppose at least we can vote in another mob at a political level, but then again, that doesn't do much to move the dial. So folks, like it or not, we're going to hear lots of convenient excuses, but the real data tells us that rates will rise, inflation will rise, and stagflation is the likely destination. And frankly, nobody's stepping up to take accountability. They'll all blame someone else. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.